This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 23rd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 300, the special tricentennial edition, a look back at podcast milestones and some of my favorite guests. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. But first, let's celebrate. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. So what happened since November 2017? Well, the worst pandemic in over a century swept the world. Along came economic chaos and social unrest that amplified a culture war and deepened divisions between rich and poor, city and country, east and west, black and white, left and right. Sometimes, though, the far left and the far right looked and sounded the same. Environmental chaos hit close to home. 619 people died in the BC heat dome after the NDP government ignored warnings. Biden defeated Trump. Trump tried to stage a coup and defeat democracy. Trudeau got reelected with two minority governments. Evidence shows that China gave him a helping hand. The Meng Wanzhou Huawei bank fraud extradition saga unfolded before the eyes of Vancouverites over almost 3 years. China grew closer to Russia. Putin went home from the Olympics in Beijing and invaded Ukraine. Premier John Horgan gave way to David Eby in Victoria the same month that Ken Sim replaced Kennedy Stewart at Vancouver City Hall. Along the way, with stories like these and so many more, the Breaker.News podcast was here to make sense of it all. From the Premier edition in 2017, hear a clip of investigative reporter Glenn Greenwald at the University of British Columbia. From the 50th edition in 2018, Richmond immigration and real estate lawyer Hong Guo during her failed bid for the Richmond mayoralty. From the 100th edition in 2019, Daryl Plekis, the corruption-fighting speaker of the BC legislature, on an underwhelming report by the Auditor General. And Port Coquitlam Mayor Brad West, who is an outspoken opponent of the Chinese Communist Party. Brad West led a successful boycott of China's lobbying at BC's annual municipal convention. And from the 150th edition, a clip of Sonia Furstenow, right before she became leader of the BC Greens and faced NDP leader John Horgan in that controversial snap election in 2020. This is the debut edition of the Breaker.News podcast for the 5th of November 2017. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues and institutions. It is a vehicle to stop secrecy, to unravel the spin, and to enable citizens to better scrutinize those who hold power and influence on the west coast of Canada and beyond. I hope you'll tune in weekly and tell your friends, your enemies too, about the Breaker.News. The big deal feature on the first edition of the Breaker.News podcast was the speech by The Intercept's Glenn Greenwald at the Allard Prize Awards at the University of British Columbia.
So when I first started talking to Edward Snowden, it was late 2012, and he contacted me via the internet. And we ended up speaking for many weeks, during which I had no information at all, no knowledge whatsoever about who he was. He was telling me, and then he had demonstrated to me that he had taken extremely sensitive documents from the most secretive agency within the world's most powerful government, which he said he wanted to share with me. And he then demonstrated that he had those. But I didn't know his name. I didn't know where he worked. I didn't know anything about him personally. I didn't know his age. I knew nothing. And in the very first conversation, the very first one that I ever had with him, he said, look, I want to give you these materials because I know that the world needs to see them, and I think you're the person who can deliver them in a way that will be effective. And I started to talk to him about ways that I could shield his anonymity to protect the government, to protect him from having the government discover who he was. And he said, no, you don't understand. I don't want anonymity.
This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 7th, 2018. The Vancouver suburb is home to 200,000 people, of which 60% are ethnic Chinese. The Breaker wanted to know more about Guo's desire to foster closer ties between Richmond and China. Here is what she had to say.
What's your message? Because there's a lot of concern in Richmond. You do want to build bridges between Richmond and China. There's people in the Hong Kong community, the Taiwanese community, people that are concerned about human rights that say that maybe Canada already has close enough ties with China, and China has some very serious problems when it comes to human rights, lack of freedom of press, for instance.
I don't think so. I do not agree.
Why don't you agree?
I think China has a lot of freedom of speech. Yes.
China has lots of freedom. Sorry, you're on the record of saying that?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Journalists are in jail in China.
Did you?
People that do my work are in jail in China. How do you say that?
I don't believe it.
At the end of August, the United Nations called on China to free Uyghur Muslims from re-education camps. The UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination estimated that up to 1 million people were in camps in Xinjiang, the Muslim province in China's far west. The same report also criticized the Chinese government for how it blocks Tibetans from international travel and how it suppresses the Tibetan language.
I mean, I'm asking you these questions because you want to build closer bridges to China, between Richmond and China. And I'm asking about your knowledge of the human rights abuses of China.
There's no human rights abuse in China.
This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 22nd, 2019. Welcome to the special 100th edition. BC Legislature Speaker Daryl Plekis in an exclusive interview with the Breaker.News.
I was expecting a forensic audit. I believe, I still do, that there's more than ample reason to think we ought to have one. That didn't happen. The focus was on policy. And one of the things which didn't surprise me, but I think a main finding of the Auditor General, was that basically we have no policies. There's, you know, it wouldn't matter what you're looking at. It's spending in any manner of form, we don't have safeguards in place. I would say that that finding is worse than any other finding we could have come up with, because anybody who understands corruption and corruption in organizations would say that that is nothing short of a candy store for corruption. Like, if you want to facilitate, enable, allow people to do things, engage in untoward behavior, what better way to do it than have no policies at all?
The Union of British Columbia Municipalities Convention is finally here. The annual gathering of mayors, councillors, and bureaucrats from across the province is this week in Vancouver. It is being held under a cloud of controversy because of a reception on September 25th at the Waterfront Center Hotel that is sponsored and hosted by the People's Republic of China. Brad West, the mayor of Port Coquitlam, has led a boycott campaign, citing concerns about China's foreign influence campaign and human rights abuses. West spent 3 terms on Port Coquitlam City Council before winning the mayoralty last October at age 33. He is this week's guest on the Breaker.News podcast.
China presents a unique set of challenges, and I think is particularly appalling and egregious. And that's because China is engaged in a number of actions that are completely hostile to Canadian national interests and to the interests of our citizens. And beyond that, China is also probably almost without rival, one of the worst human rights abusers in the entire world. And so when I put all of that together, when I consider that we currently have 2 Canadian citizens, 2 of our fellow Canadians, who are being held in a Chinese jail, held hostage, really, and completely as retaliation for Canada following the rule of law,
when I think about the provocative actions of the government of China against our farmers, when I think about the things that we have seen in the past several months on the streets of Vancouver and Metro Vancouver, where the government of China is clearly behind a coordinated attempt to silence voices and intimidate voices in support of freedom and democracy in Hong Kong. I just think that it is beyond my comprehension that any elected official in this province would think that it would be appropriate to attend an event and accept free drinks, free food, and be wined and dined by the very government that is behind all of those actions.
This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 6th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 150. Vying for leadership are Cam Brewer, an East Vancouver resident, First Nations lawyer with North Vancouver's Radcliffe and Company, and an environmental law teacher at Simon Fraser University. Kim Darwin, a Sunshine Coast entrepreneur who ran for the Greens in the 2017 election. Darwin became the party's vice chair in 2019. And Sonia Furstenow, the 2017 elected Cowichan Valley MLA, who rose to prominence when she led the Shawnigan Residents Association campaign against a landfill that threatened their drinking water. Sonia Furstenow.
I would say to him what I've been saying publicly, which is it's in the midst of a pandemic, as we see the numbers rising steadily in British Columbia, and as we're grappling with a back to school plan that has created a lot of anxiety and stress for families and teachers and children, it's irresponsible at a time when there's no need for an election. A budget was passed. The three parties came together in March at the beginning of COVID and demonstrated that we were all capable and importantly recognized our responsibility to rise above partisanship in the face of a pandemic and work together. And we did that. And we achieved, you know, a historic session, a hybrid session. The NDP were given in one day session a $5 billion increase to their budget on March 23rd. And so to suggest that it's time to go to an election in the middle of a pandemic when you have evidence in the BC legislature of parties rising above partisanship because we need to in the face of a global pandemic is highly irresponsible. And putting partisanship ahead of the health and well-being and safety of the citizens of British Columbia in a time like this is, you know, it's beyond irresponsible. That's what I will say. I've been saying it publicly. I'll say it to him directly. And if he says, well, we want out of CASA, we aren't sitting in the legislature right now.
On the 250th edition, August 7th, 2022, supply chain expert Glenn Ross on the economic ripple effects of Russia's illegal war on Ukraine.
Eastern Ukraine, the Donbas, is where the industry resides and where all the wheat and stuff comes. 80% of the wheat and grain comes out of that part of the world. Russia gets control of that. They control world food supply. Right now, they're trying to do that. Russia this morning announced that they're not going to have the same crop this year as they had last year. What are they doing? They're sending a message that the availability of grain is going to get constricted. It's going to push prices up. They're hoping for two things. The first thing is the third world will revolt and say this is brought on by NATO and by Ukraine. And they will try, and he's hoping they will absolve him of any involvement, even though he's gone into Ukraine. The other two things are Putin's waiting for two things, General Winter and time. Time, if it comes around, will be on the Ukrainian side. But General Winter defeated Hitler. He also defeated Napoleon and guys before that, even the Normans when they came down the rivers. Winter hits Ukraine in December through February. That's why there's a flurry of activity right now in the Donbas and the southeastern Ukraine. Ukraine knows it has to capture back that territory between now and the end of October. end of November, sorry. If Russia's still there and the ground hardens, all bets are off. Russia's running out of munitions. It has no troops left. It's got about a 75 to 80% attrition rate. They're heading for defeat.
Edition number 275, January 29th, 2023. Dr. Julian Summers of Simon Fraser University on British Columbia's decriminalization of hard drugs.
The part that's most worrisome for me is the mindset behind this intervention is one held by people who are willing to ignore abject poverty, physical suffering associated with long-term homelessness and untreated mental illness, and prioritize a focus on the source of their drugs. It really is unique in the world.
On this edition, I'm looking back at some of my most favorite interviews. Out with Christy Clark's BC Liberals, in with John Horgan's NDP, and so many other changes and challenges ever since then, geopolitically, socioeconomically, and environmentally. Integrity BC's Dermot Travis was the guest on the third edition of the podcast, November 19th, 2017. Was the big money era in BC politics really over?
In terms of the omission side, not only do you have the issue of how parties spend their money as being one of the omissions, I think that they missed, one, a golden opportunity to reduce the disclosure requirements in the legislation. Currently, only donors over $250 are disclosed. That has not been changed in the new legislation. Even the Liberal Party proposed lowering it to $100. I think that they've made a mistake in that, and I think they've made a mistake in not adding on what information should now be collected about contributors. And the most important piece of information that needs to be collected about contributors is who is your employer. Because one lesson from other jurisdictions that have banned corporate and union donations is some companies in particular that have tried to use their employees, our list of what are called in Quebec straw men, to make political donations on their behalf, and that they are then reimbursed. But it is very much corporate money. SNC-Lavalin recently accepted the ruling of Elections Canada in this regard, that they in fact had done that practice for a number of years at the federal level after corporate donations had been banned in the federal arena.
On the December 20th, 2020 edition, former Press Gallery investigative reporter Sean Holman. After Craig James was charged, Holman analyzed Press Gallery coverage of the scandal at the BC Legislature on podcast 165.
I would really like to see, that I have yet to see, is some kind of public explanation and self-reflection for what happened. Why were individuals so skeptical about what Daryl Plekis and Alan Mullen had to say? Why was there not more credibility and credence given to the allegations that they were making? And why was there so much of an appearance of favoritism towards Craig James? I think those are legitimate questions, and questions that would be really helpful, I think, for the people who are down there at the time to reflect on. I'm not a big believer in blame per se, but I do feel that when we could have done better, and I'm talking about the media, we do owe it to the public to explain how we could have done better and why we did better. And that's what I would like to see.
Another focus of the Breaker.News podcast, mega events and sports corruption. Athletes are forced to operate under strict rules on the field of play, but what about the people in the suits, in the boardrooms, and the politicians that feed them millions of dollars of taxpayers' money? College of the Holy Cross sports economist Victor Matheson joined me on the July 8th, 2018 edition podcast number 37.
Both the Olympics and FIFA, who they really make rich is the IOC and FIFA, right? You know, there's about $4 billion on every four-year cycle in FIFA, and that money doesn't get pocketed by the local organizers. That's FIFA's money, which they share a very, very tiny bit with the host country. Same thing with the IOC. IOC, again, about $4, $5, $6 billion amount of money being made over the four-year cycle, and about maybe a third of that is shared with the local hosts to help defray costs. And of course, that doesn't come anywhere close to what it costs to actually host these events.
Late investigative journalist Andrew Jennings was on the March 25th, 2018 edition. Jennings was the author of several books and host of several documentaries that exposed corruption at the core of FIFA and the International Olympic Committee. Jennings authored Lords of the Rings, Power, Money, and Drugs in the Modern Olympics, and Foul, The Secret World of FIFA, Bribes, Vote Rigging, and Ticket Scandals. He also produced and presented many documentaries for the BBC. Jennings was the inspiration for my work to chronicle the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics, and I was honored to meet him when he came to Vancouver for a speaking engagement before the Games. His work lives on the transparencyandsport.org website.
You know, there's one thing which would sort all these out, and I announce it now and again, and nobody takes any notice, because they're not paid to take any notice, and that is, we have in England, and you have it 100 other countries. I'm sure you've got it in Canada, you've got it in America, and that's freedom of information. Gosh, what a subversive thing that is. We can't possibly, wait a minute, what is it? It's about kicking a ball about. They're highly paid people, they perform very well, they're a joy to go and see. But it's only kicking a ball about. So why can't FIFA, with its huge resources, put up a few mil to get a small team together to read the things every day and to put them through? And, of course, overnight, that would clean it up. It just would drive corruption completely out of the window, because every story, the press and the press agencies would have to follow. And if they didn't, well, they'd die, I think, because the better stories that come out this way. So I think if you bring this sort of pressure to bear on them, it's not exactly unpleasant. It's just government saying, oh, by the way, you're subject to freedom of information. Okay, we won't interfere, nothing to do with it, but we put the mechanism there, get on with it. And I think you'd get a most surprising and hopefully a new world of sport. All these people who followed for years and years and just with a heavy heart watched them parading and pompously on the world stage. Actually, there are people who like football. And again, if you didn't know anything, you ask the questions. It's not very expensive compared with the sort of revenues they're expecting to make. So freedom of information now, please.
The Breaker.News podcast is also focused on the rise of China and the Communist Party's negative impact on the lives of Canadians. I spoke to Tiananmen Square protest survivor Zhou Fengshuo when he visited Richmond during the Hong Kong democracy protests of the fall of 2019. This is from podcast 101, September 19th, 2019.
As a Tiananmen survivor, I'm very grateful about Hong Kong, what they have done in the last 30 years to keep the truth and the memory alive. What's happening today is a reincarnation of the Tiananmen democratic movement in Hong Kong. The young people today, they grew up going to the Tiananmen candlelight vigil. And here too, in Vancouver, there's a very strong presence about the Hong Kong people commemorating Tiananmen. That's a very important, essential democratic education for the young generation.
BC radio legend Dan Russell joined me on edition number 261, October 23rd, 2022, to talk about sports and his memoir, Pleasant Good Evening. Dan Russell recounted the start of his 30-year sports talk dynasty in October 1984.
I was actually worried if the words would actually come out when the sports talk orchestra introduced me, making it even more uncomfortable for me, because I don't like, you know, necessarily being watched while I'm broadcasting, is Gary Rabel thought it would be, you know, his heart was in the right place. So he thought maybe it'd be a good idea if he came and sat in with me on that first night, just in case I had some problems. Well, that made me even more nervous. But we somehow got through it. You outlined the, you know, Bill LaForge, and the next day, Tony Muser. And I think within a day or two, I was doing some open phones, and I didn't have anybody staring at me, which made me more comfortable. And obviously the phone lines, you know, started jumping. I think on the Thursday of that week, it was really when it started jumping, because the Canucks lost a game in Philadelphia, giving up 13 goals, I believe it was, which is still tied for a club record. And Bill LaForge came on that night and said he saw some positives. And I thought, whoa, he saw positives. Well, that just, that made the phone board just dance. And it was really that night I felt the show launched, is that we found, you know, a little bit of a real early stride as to what we were going to be. And yeah, Bill LaForge was our first guest, but he really caused the show to ignite that first week later that week.
In early 2019, pro soccer player Kira McCormick of North Vancouver blew the whistle on disgraced former national team and Whitecaps coach Bob Berarda, who was coaching teenage girls. Berarda was sent to jail in 2022 for sexual assaults against four players over a 20-year period. Here is Kira McCormick on edition number 263, November 6, 2022.
I didn't feel like I could move forward in my life, you know, knowing that he was still on a field coaching teenage girls and that everybody was just watching it happen and doing nothing. So yeah, versus where I am now, I mean, this is obviously like beyond a best case scenario in terms of how this is all, you know, played out to this point. And obviously it was a massive, massive risk that I took and that other people, you know, that came out after my blog, that they, like, we all took big risks in terms of coming forward, and we didn't know what would happen at that point. So I think, you know, I feel an immense amount of pride and, you know, for, I guess, what I did and what everybody else did as well. Like, I think it was a massive collective effort to just shift the narrative that, like, it's not okay. It's not okay to stay silent. It's not okay to, you know, put success in sports ahead of taking care of people and doing the right thing. So I think it is. It's about shifting the narrative moving forward. And it's about saying, you know, what's okay and what's not okay, and drawing that line. And so I think that that's the biggest thing that I think has sort of changed in what came out of coming forward in 2019.
On edition number 286, April 16th, 2023, two island nations, Taiwan, a self-governing democratic island in the shadow of communist China, and Ireland, where a 25-year-old peace accord has stood the test of time. My guests were Taipei Economic and Cultural Office Director General Angel Liu and Louise O'Reilly, a Sinn Féin member of the Irish Parliament.
We don't want to let the Chinese government feel that they can decide which friend Taiwan government can make and which friend not to make.
And it's also an important time because the talks about an investment agreement are both governments want to start talking about that investment agreement.
We are glad that in Canada's Indo-Pacific strategy, and also in the recent report, interim report released by the Canada PRC Special Committee in the Canadian Parliament, the report about Taiwan-Canada relations, both would like to urge the Canadian government to forge a closer ties with Taiwan in economic and trade and technology, education, and Indigenous affairs. So a lot of the areas that we can work together in non-sensitive issues.
From when I was about 5.5, 6 up to when I was 16, I lived in Dundalk, just up from Drogheda, as you'll be familiar with. So I lived in Dundalk for that time. We wanted the conflict to be over, but we also wanted a route that we could get to Irish unity by peaceful and democratic means. And I remember my parents and talking to them at the time, and they celebrated. You know, we did too. And you know, there were a lot of people who were skeptical about how well the agreement would endure and whether or not it would be enough. And you know, there was very tense negotiations. I wasn't part of them, but obviously as an Irish person, I was watching them very closely. Very tense negotiations right up until the last minute, and when George Mitchell said, look, I'm going home for Easter, lads, this is, you know, this is either getting done or we'll lose this momentum. And just to see them seize the momentum and get it over the line at the last minute. And then to look back now, 25 years on, at how robust and enduring that agreement was is quite the thing, because there were plenty of detractors at the time. But I remember listening to the likes of Gerry Adams and John Hume and others being interviewed, and they said, you know, we think this will last, we think this will hold. And, you know, to know that and to see the that peaceful and democratic way to a new and united Ireland laid out in word form, and also the peace that it brought with it for my friends who lived in the north and my friends who lived along the border, that was incredibly important. You know, people that meant a lot to people, and it the endurance of that that international peace treaty has meant a huge lot to Irish people.
And finally, some laughs. A regular feature on the Breaker.News podcast, the MMA panel, featuring Mackin, that's me, research co-pollster Mario Canseco, and Simon Fraser University City Programs' Andy Yan. The topic was the saga of the barge that washed up on Sunset Beach in a November 15th, 2021 windstorm. On the July 3rd, 2022 edition, podcast number 245, I asked for Andy and Mario's predictions about when the barge would finally disappear. The pandemic isn't over until it's over, and the barge isn't gone until it's gone. So, first civic politics question in this election year, will the barge be gone before the October 15th civic election, or will the mask mandate return before the October 15th civic election? First, Mario Canseco.
I don't think the barge will be completely gone before the election happens. So based on previous experience, I don't think this is going to be gone, and might actually be a nice backdrop as we're preparing for the municipal race.
Andy?
I think it will. I agree with you, Mario, that it will still be there. I think that they're going to have issues in terms of labor, and I think in terms of equipment, there's probably only so many types of boats and as well as workers who know how to deconstruct a barge.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to... These 300 editions of the podcast would not have been possible without you, the listener. And a special shout out to those listeners who have gone one step forward and supported me on Patreon for $2 a month or more. Thank you for the support. You've certainly helped out in making this possible. So I want to thank the following and apologize for any mispronunciations. So to Tony Ditmars, YT, Barb Ewens, Kevin Hudson, Darian Kovacs, Jordan Bateman, MC, Amy McKinney, Claire Wan, Gary Belleville, Chris Vernon, Amy, Ken Denike, David J., Brian Ferguson, John O'Flynn, Joe Kunzler, Jay McDermott, Connor Gibson, Andras Dunks, Ken Wakeman, Rochelle Benoit, Patrick Dora, Paul Doroshenko, Ian Price, Chris Doyle, Andrew Ip, Suwan Dujao, Matthew McBride, Laura Rosenthal, Sam Mason, Mr. Warren, Lisa Ross, Johnny, James O'Byrne, Alex Hamer, Eric Flovell, John Wong, Michael Gagnon, Ian Winninger, Mason Kerr, Brian Carney, Audrey Jane LeFerrier, Jerry O. Cutler, Michael Ewan, James Swank, Daniel McElroy, Vicky Drader, Kelly Itchelson, Deborah Jones, Leslie Kajdan, Monde Redman, David Gibson, Laura Galanders, Mark Spire, John Kennedy, Elvio Chiez, Karen P. Vey, Barbara May, Richard, Spruce Hill Contracting, Lee Lau, Rob Baxter, Randy Sogstad, Stephen Elliott Buckley, Quan Lee, Robin Grant Richardson, Dave from Outer Space, Daryl Greer, John Brady, Alexander Fuster, Harvey Leonard, and Kivol. Thank you to all of you. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast, the special 300th edition for the week of July 23rd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thank you for joining me. Did you know that on the 23rd of July in 1962, Jackie Robinson was inducted to Baseball's Hall of Fame, and in 1995, Comet Hale-Bopp was discovered? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.